The whole
Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Life and Leadership Gap Analysis Series. On this series, we are talking about closing the gap on what we know intellectually and what we do when we are in the middle of the action. We're exploring the principles in motion, getting back to the basics by visiting all the greats that we know and love, like Stephen Covey, Jose and Don Miguel Ruiz, and Patrick Lencioni, to name a few. In fact, this conversation is part of a 12-part series where we are exploring the 7 habits of highly effective people, as well as the 5 agreements. Our intention was to bring together inspired minds for meaningful discussions around the principles of life and leadership, and then to explore the gap between what we know and how we are living and leading these principles. Are you sharpening your saw, like Stephen Covey says? Can you say that you are truly impeccable with your word, like Don Miguel Ruiz would say? We are your hosts. I'm Charmaine Hammond with the Hammond Group, and my co-host is Christine LaPerriere with Leaders in Motion. We both work together to inspire and build healthy, well-developed teams. I have worked with corrections, the oil companies, nonprofits, and everything in between. Christine has worked with everything for profit, from manufacturing vehicles to growing consumer packaged goods. Our experiences truly have covered all bases.
So thank you so much, Charmaine. Today, we've invited Barb Patterson to come on and speak with us. Barb, please tell everybody just a little bit about you before we get started.
Sure. I actually, last January, decided to quit my corporate executive job that I have and start my own business doing global executive coaching and consulting. And I made that transition. It was really a personal one. I was living over in Paris at the time and had a wonderful career and a great relationship with the organization and just felt a real personal desire to create something of my own and start to do more work in the area of leadership coaching. And so for the last 10 months, I've been creating my own business.
Yeah, and I can speak to the fact that you've done some coaching with me, and it's been very powerful and amazing work. So I was going to say I'm lucky because I've had a chance to experience a bit of the type of coaching that you're doing these days. So when we asked you, out of the 7 habits of highly effective people and the 5 agreements, we asked you if you'd like to come talk to us. You said that the 5th agreement, be skeptical but learn to listen, was the one that you really wanted to have a discussion about. And so just to get started, why was that?
I think all the topics are really interesting, but that one just glared out, stood out for me. And, you know, as we move further into our conversation today, I think you'll see why. I just have a huge passion about this idea of what is truth, what's our truth, and the power of connecting to our own wisdom. So I wanted to talk about it. Wanted to explore it with you both.
When you talk about knowing what our truth is and connecting, the power of connection, tell us more about that. What does that mean to you?
Yeah, sure. You know, I think in the 5th agreement, you know, be skeptical but learn to listen. I think that I see 2 things. One is the high level, be skeptical, is about doubt and using doubt as a tool for connecting us to our power. And the learn to listen part for me is about that connecting to our truth or, you know, as I've said just a moment ago, you know, our innate wisdom. And when I first heard, you know, at first glance you can see be skeptical and learn to listen and then hear about doubt. And, you know, I had this sort of initial reaction. I'm supposed to doubt myself? Doesn't that seem counterintuitive? And yet when you explore further about what the authors are speaking to, it's really about the importance of doubt and that, you know, questioning what we've come to, the assumptions we've made about who we are and our belief systems, our ideas, our lives, And in that, we start to buy and believe those, and we hold those as our truth, and we start to act out of those ideas, those assumptions, those realities we've created, versus slowing down and really questioning, you know, where did those come from? Throughout our lives, we're told by our family and friends, teachers, you know, out of love many times, about who we are, and we see ourselves through their reflection. And some of that's great. You know, this isn't about judgment, good or bad. But in our desire to belong and be loved, you know, we interpret these things, right? And from our interpretation, we have these beliefs, and these beliefs and opinions start to shape us and who we are and how we behave in the world. And often in that, we're denying our own perception. Don't slow down enough to take the time to go deeper, to ask ourselves who we think we are.
I love this point. I'm just laughing because even in preparation for this, I was looking through some notes on the Fifth Agreement, and Don Miguel Ruiz says, don't believe me, don't believe yourself, but learn to listen. And, you know, it's funny, I was thinking about my own experience with this. I have kind of a really simple example of this, but I was raised, my dad has always told me how I am. I'm a terrible speller, and that I have, you know, kind of poor use of the English language. You know, he's always making fun of me for my poor writing skills. But it's funny how I've heard that since such a young age. I heard that, and I've always heard that I was really good at math and science, which much explains kind of where I came from, an engineering background and things like that. But it was really interesting as I kind of, in my, you know, adult years, I find myself having such a hunger to write and communicate and be talking with people and, you know, Barb, you know, like coaching people and being in front of people. And it's funny how I really had to disassociate and almost learn that those beliefs that I had about myself were actually not, it's not so much that they're not true, it's just that that's all they are. It's kind of, they're like clouds, you know, they kind of cloud our thinking about what's real. And I know for me, it's just, I've kind of had my own journey with that, even just recently trying to write an essay and hand it off to somebody, and they went, oh my God, this is good. And I kind of laughed and went, but I'm not good at writing, you know. It's just interesting how we hold those beliefs so close over time.
Yeah, absolutely. I think those are great examples. And, you know, what happens then is we feel these sort of inner promptings, right, these sort of ideas that come to mind or a thought or we feel inspired about something, and yet then we try and measure it. It butts up against what our perceived ideas and beliefs about who we are and who we think we are, and often we stop ourselves. We say, well, no, that's not true for me, or we stop it because of what we think others may think, whatever it might be. And we actually put a lid on our potential. You know, we're evolving, we're growing. You know, we start to give significance and meaning to our thinking and to these ideas and these absolutes we've created. When really, if we can just understand that, you know, our experiences, our feelings are nothing more than a direct reflection of our thinking in that moment. They're the truth. They, you know, our fear about exploring a new direction in our work is nothing more than just a thought. And when we try and decide whether to act or not, we're measuring it against, not against our own wisdom for it, we start measuring against our history or our past. And when we do that, we limit ourselves.
It's such a rich time when you talk about, and as you were talking about this, I pictured a team actually that I worked with many years ago in my early, early days of doing team building and team facilitation, and it was a mixed group. They worked for a nonprofit organization, and there was probably 18 staff there. Half of them were new within the last 2 years, and the rest of them had been there since the organization opened, so they were 10-year-plus employees. And one of the things that really started to happen is what you're talking about, Barb, history gets in the way. There was one group of people that was so creative and passionate about the new programs they wanted to deliver through this organization. And they were stopping themselves not other people. They were stopping themselves because they measured their creativity and their ideas against what the assumptions were and what the history kind of told them. And it was really sad to see them not move forward on some of this.
Yeah, it's a great point. I think we do it in organizations. We do it in our leadership. We do it in parenting. And we do it with ourselves. You know, we start to create this sort of inner system for a criteria for making decisions. And that criteria is, you know, in the book they would say it's based on lies. They go right to the bottom. You know, they're blunt and they say it's all lies. But what I think of is if we can just begin to doubt some of those things that we've just assumed as truth, some of those assumptions and absolutes and ideas and beliefs we have about ourselves, if we can just begin to doubt, just it creates a loosening, right? And in that loosening, like we say, what if that's not true? Sometimes that simple question creates an opening for a new thought to come in, for new insight. You know, I often like to think of an aperture in a camera. You know, when the aperture is closed and not much light gets in, the wider the aperture, the more light. If you think about doubt in this way and connecting to what's possible and our potential for us, when we have a lot of beliefs and a lot of ideas and assumptions about what's possible for us or who we are in relationship, who we are as leaders, you know, what my potential is, what my strengths are, all of that. We have a lot of thinking, a lot of beliefs about that. We create a tightening. Our aperture closes. And so we don't even see what's possible. But if we can begin to doubt, begin to question that, what if it's not true? What I'm hearing something else. What if I paid a little bit more attention to that? What happens is that aperture begins to open, and it doesn't take much. Sometimes it's just a crack and for light to come in, and then what happens is all of a sudden we'll have that inner prompting. We'll see somebody will reflect back to us a new idea. We'll begin to see things differently, and the wider the aperture, the more clarity. The wider the aperture, the more open we are, the more we are able to connect deeply to our own wisdom. We're listening at a deeper level.
I think this is so interesting. I'm trying to think of how to even apply this more in the space of teams and working in large groups, because I love what you just said, and I think the part that I find so interesting, I was just working with a group this week, and when you talk about doubt, I was working with a group that really, it's much to Charmaine's point, that doubts the possibility that they can be the market leader in their space. And there's a lot of reasons why. They've created a story about why that is. I'm just thinking about how that doubt alone really limits the possibility for what's next and how, you know, and I don't know, I'm just kind of talking out loud, but I'm trying to think of, you know, how do we help people open that aperture?
Yeah, I think it's a great question, and I think often in leadership in particular, just to speak specifically to that, we want to develop our leaders by giving them more skills and competencies and switch behaviors, and often those things are very valuable. But for me, the most important variable to performance is state of mind. And this is, we can use the aperture as an example with state of mind. If our state of mind is frustrated, pressured, insecure, whatever it might be, our aperture is closed. But the more open we are, we're in a higher state of mind. We feel more open to what's possible. We're seeing things with more perspective. We're listening to others and to ourselves from a deeper level. Then that's really where the creativity comes in, and innovation and problem solving and clarity of thinking and, you know, making smart decisions. You know, so I think it's a, if we can understand what's behind the state of mind, and to go back to the book and as they speak to it there, is this idea that all these beliefs and ideas we have are just thought and they're not true. We make them reality, but it's not a reality. We can first see that we're the one thinking those thoughts. We're the one creating our reality through that. And then it's through our awareness that we have consciousness that we're able to see it at play. And then the more we understand that, that we don't get caught up in a thought. We don't buy our thinking 100%, you know, and we don't just stick with that. We, the more open we are, we use that doubt, then what happens is we connect more to that creative life force. And that shows up in our ability to really be, you know, outrageously productive and creative and innovative. And I know a lot of companies, a lot of people right now are really, this is a hot topic, hot things that they're looking at. So to answer your question, Christine, I think in my mind, it's really understanding this element that is the real transformation comes from a both leadership and a personal perspective. The doing is really nothing more than starting to understand what we're talking about here, the power of doubt, the power of questioning, the power of connecting to your own innate wisdom and listening more deeply to that, not to these ideas and thoughts that you've decided are truth.
I just love what you were talking about in terms of that we're shifting now, that that often companies are looking at giving leaders not just the skills training. I'm seeing that shift and really loving how a lot of leaders are bringing in, whether it's trainers, consultants, or using their in-house personnel to help people not just develop the skills that need to be leaders, but what you're talking about, how to manage their thoughts, how to show up present, how to be able to be aware of how they're, what they're giving off to the world and how they are projecting to other people. And to challenge, like you said, some of these thoughts and beliefs and assumptions that have existed forever in the workplace. And I think there's huge value in that, because the leaders that I've worked with that are doing that, that are modeling this, really are starting to create these cycles of transformation in the workplace.
Yeah, I agree completely. And I think what's so interesting is, for those of us that do this work, having me been in a leadership position and running a large global function and working with leaders from around the world, I really understand the desire to give me the formula. You know, I think people have in their hearts, they want to do a job well, right? We want to make a difference. We want to make an impact. And so we have this idea that if you give me the formula, I'll just do it. But what's interesting is once we understand that the formula is us, that people don't follow us because of what we say. They follow us because of our grounding. And similar to what you're saying, another word for that might be our presence. People respond to that authenticity. We feel the difference, whether we can put words to it or not. We feel the difference from when someone's being authentic and when someone's not. We feel the difference of somebody who has, you know, who's grounded more intellectually versus somebody who's grounded intellectually and, you know, at a deeper level, right? You know, we have that ability to sense it. And what happens is people often make the mistake of focusing on the content. I got to get my words right. Versus knowing that the real journey is the personal one of understanding more deeply who you are, connecting more deeply to your own truth, and then becoming a messenger of that. You know, I used to think, oh, I'm going to write a book. And then I'd think, well, what's my message? And I'd get so caught up that I couldn't even, you know, Christine, your example, I couldn't even write because I'd think, what's my message? Well, and somebody else already said that, so I can't say that. And I got really caught up in the content of it. And what I'm really discovering is content is not king. The more that I just continue to explore what we're talking about here today and I connect more to my own wisdom, what I say today may not be important tomorrow. Just because in our conversation today, my wisdom guided me to say something and it was really powerful, I'll get caught and I want to repeat that because I think that was the trick, right? I'll think it's what I said when it was really where I was coming from that made the difference.
Got me over here. The wheels are turning. I love this. You know, the thing that's striking me is so funny, speaking of just what comes up for you as wisdom today, while I'm listening to you speak, I'm having an aha moment over here. And that's it, especially given that all three of us on the call right at the moment in our careers are all serving from the outside of an organization. Mm-hmm. And the thought that I'm having is when you talk about state of mind, Barb, and the beliefs that limit the possibilities, I'm just wondering if when we're serving from the outside, are we able to come in with that state of mind that's not damaged and cluttered with all the corporate culture noise that gets created over time and all of the beliefs about all the different team members. I mean, I think sometimes about the work that we do, and it's not that anybody in the organization don't have the wisdom to do what we do, but there is something really powerful about consultants and coaching and facilitators and outside resources that for some reason can really help with the performance. So it's just striking me while we're talking about state of mind. Do you have any thoughts on that, Bob?
I do. A couple things come to mind. You know, I think first of all, for sure, when we're not in the midst of it, it's easier to be clear. But when we're having a moment where we're buying the truth of something, where we're buying our feelings as reality, where we're really caught up, it's our aperture's closed, right? Or more narrow, so we don't see. So having somebody that can come in and help us see that, I think, is where the real value of coaching and consulting lies. Do we all have that ability to do that for ourselves? Absolutely. And so, you know, I think it becomes the real power for us as coaches and consultants, I think, is it can be real tempting to, as a coach or a consultant, to love the contact high. You know, by that I mean that people, we work with people, and because they have a new insight in our presence, or we're sharing some insight, they see us as the contact high, right? They see that, oh, it's you, the coach, you, the consultant. And I think there's a real danger in that. You know, first of all, they're seeing it as outside in. They see the coach and the consultant as the change agent or the person that's facilitating the insight, when really it's themselves. So if we can come in as, you know, in our role and help people understand the power that they are already living, you know, they're already living these principles. They just don't have the consciousness or the awareness of how they're playing, how it's playing out, right? We all think, we all feel as a result of our thinking, and we all experience our life because of our consciousness. That's true no matter whether you're in a low state of mind or a high state of mind. And I think people mistake, often we think our state of mind is a result of our circumstances outside of us. Well, my boss is a jerk, or my employee's always late, or I, you know, am having problems communicating something. We start to think it's those circumstances outside of us that impact us. But again, if we go back to what we've been talking about, you know, over these last half hour, you'll see that it's the inner game. The inner game is where real transformation happens. And it's understanding how that works that gives people the own power. And I think then the contact high comes from them. There's so much power and potential in knowing that it really is you. It really is about connecting to your own wisdom and opening that aperture and understanding when you're in a low state versus a high state. And when we have that understanding, we just start to see things differently. And when we see things differently, we act differently.
I love that comment. That when I was a mediator years ago, that was one of my favorite exercises to do with clients that were in conflict, was to just invite them to see the situation through a different pair of lenses. You know, let's just do this, I would say to them. And it was amazing to see what would happen when they could look at the situation just a little bit differently, through a different pair of lenses. How they spoke to one another changed. The creativity that emerged in their solution-building process was different. But when they stayed stuck in the way they saw the situation and stuck in the history, it really impacted their ability to connect with each other and to really make an authentic solution that served everybody involved.
Yeah, I think that's beautiful. Yeah, you know, it reminds me that when people have an experience of that, like I think, you know, everyone listening and the three of us can think of times when we've acted out of an assumption and then later discovered we were way off, right? And other times when we've slowed down enough to just kind of check in and say, you know, question it. Hey, what's really going on? What's another possibility, another lens? You know, what's another way? And we act out of that, and it feels completely different. You know, we do this all the time. And I think the idea here and the value of what you guys are providing in these conversations is for us to become more conscious and more aware of when we're doing that, when we're acting out of beliefs and, old paradigms or assumptions or perceptions versus when we're acting out of our wisdom. You know, it's an interesting thing to begin to pay attention to and not making yourself right or wrong. But I think the more we become conscious of that and we see the difference, we start to feel that difference, we see it, we experience it in our life, it teaches us. It will guide us.
When you're thinking about this, Barb, I know because you have a large amount of coaching clients, I'm curious, do you have a story of maybe how that's unfolded in a coaching session? I can only imagine you have quite a few amazing discussions with people. Do you have an example off the top of your head?
Yeah, definitely. So I can think of one individual, one client I'm working with, and he was the CEO of a small company. And I want to share his because I think a lot of people will relate to it. He's incredibly bright and really intelligent and was actually, he invented something and ended up selling it for multi-millions of dollars, and then the company wanted him to stay on and to help bring it to market. And he believed that he was paid for his intelligence, right? He believed that that's what they wanted from him, that his mind, his thinking was the most important asset he had. Yet also what was happening was he was really stressed, you know, losing sleep, not as clarity of thinking. He was, you know, in some pretty major life decisions that he had to make within the new business and within his next venture. And he was running at full steam and pressure. I know in a lot of organizations, being busy and pressure is like a badge of honor. You know, we take it as a given, and we don't really understand the implications. And through my work with this client and helping him understand that, you know, that idea of pressure and that his intelligence is the most important thing he has, by beginning to loosen that up, by helping him understand the nature of the human experience and how this works, you know, he was able to start to slowly shift and say, okay, you know, what else is there? Ultimately, they bought his invention, right? They bought his creativity. His intelligence helped him sell it, helped him market it, helped him do all those things. But ultimately, what they were inspired by him is his creativity, his innovation. As we talked about that, he started to see that, yes, innovation was about flow. It was about connecting, not even thinking. It actually happened. His idea happened when he wasn't thinking. You know, when he was doing something totally mundane. He wasn't at work. He wasn't sitting behind a desk. So he started to see that where this comes from, where inspiration comes from, and how his aperture being open or closed affects his ability to be creative and innovative, and ultimately even his intelligent judgment, right? In that, he completely turned around and is now starting a brand new business with a new invention and getting, you know, multi-million dollar investors from around the world to back him.
Wow.
Does that give you a feel, Christine?
Yeah, that is excellent, and thank you for that. That gives, you know, really gives you an idea of how you can get so caught up in your own thinking sometimes that it creates stress and it creates pain and agony sometimes just through the nature of how thought works. So this has been so good, Barb. And I have to say, we're right at the end of the half hour, and it just kind of flew by. So with that, this is such a deep conversation. Can you summarize one thought or concept or takeaway that you'd like to share with our audience as they move forward with all this information you just shared?
You know, I think what I'd like to say is most likely you're underestimating your own capacity for potential. And you have an opportunity to have a whole new experience of who you can be in the world. I just encourage you to begin to doubt some of those things you've held as truths about your own limitations and what's possible for you, and to let the aperture open and listen more deeply to your own wisdom about who you can be and what you are and who you are.
That's so good. Thank you. And Charmaine, do you have any thoughts in addition to that?
I have loads of thoughts. This was a great conversation, Barb, and you've really brought some important things to light for us to think about. What keeps going through my mind is something that you said at the very, very beginning, and you asked the question, what if that isn't true? And I see such potential for me to ask that question in the conversations with people and to challenge our history and to challenge the beliefs and assumptions that we're bringing to the world, bringing to our workplace relationships. And instead of people working so hard to prove the assumption right, have the conversation about what if that assumption is wrong.
That's great.
Yeah, and I think you might have even just touched on the point that I was thinking is a good close. And I know I have to go through a little bit of exercise over my identity and the things that I make up as my identity. I'm not a good writer, but I am good at math. I'm not good at this. I am good at that. And I know for me, in the last couple of years, I really asked where the origin of a lot of those beliefs have come from. And for me, that's where it lifted away. Again, you know, I'm actually pretty good at writing. And so I'm changing that. I'm changing that truth in my own life just by, you know, knowing that that idea came from somewhere that's not tangible, it's not real, and there's a lot more to create beyond that. Thank you both so much. I hope everybody listening really enjoyed today's conversation. Thanks so much, ladies. Have a good one.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.